So I'd like to thank all of you for joining us for our World Peace Diet Circle call. For this is March 17th, 2016, and I'm delighted, as I say, to be able to gather with you folks here on this call, and I think it's really a precious opportunity. And of course, I want to say right at the beginning that if you have any pressing questions or concerns, then I would be glad to answer them at any point. You can press star 6 on your phone in order to be visible to me here at the on the screen and the dashboard. All right, so this is great. We like to take just a couple of minutes at the very beginning and just settle into the call, and then I'd love to talk a little bit about the recent lecture whirlwind experience that I experienced going to England, Ireland, and Holland, and just got back a little less than, I guess, about a week ago. And Madeline also went to Europe independently somewhat to attend to her vegan mother. So we both had successful trips, I would say, on multiple fronts. And let's just take a moment as we begin our time, and just however you happen to find it comfortable, wherever you happen to be, to take a moment and feel a sense of connectedness with each other through not just the technical ability we have to listen and to record this so people can listen later, but also at a deeper level to what really matters, which is the shared aspiration in our heart to not only evolve our own consciousness so that we become more effective advocates for peace, freedom, and justice, and loving kindness in our world, both right with those immediately around us and in the larger experience of our planet. I think we're all, working in that level, on those levels, but also beyond that to give thanks that we're part of an awakening of a movement here on planet Earth that is designed, I think, at its very core, the vegan movement, to help us not only question the old stories and narratives of violence, abuse, and exploitation and oppression of other living beings, but also, even more importantly, that it's the creation of a new story, a new set of narratives, a new way of seeing, a new vision of the possibility of how we can live on this earth together based on a deeper and more accurate understanding of the interconnectedness of all life, of the enormous intelligence and abilities of both human beings and non-human animals, the beings we call animals, that we share, I think, far more together in terms of being allies and friends on this earth than we realize. And so we live, I think we're all aware, in critical times for the environmental ecosystems that are under a huge onslaught right now, as well as the human systems that are in many ways causing enormous suffering by overly compensating a tiny elite and forcing literally hundreds of millions and even billions of our brothers and sisters into poverty and desperation, hunger and thirst and suffering. So to just realize that there are many, many people working together in a variety of ways to help raise awareness and bring healing to the situations that we have happening on the earth today, that at the deepest possible level we see our attitudes towards non-human animals as being foundational to the attitudes towards each other and to the earth, and that as we heal those, we're going a long way toward healing ourselves on every level, physically and psychologically and spiritually, ethically, culturally and environmentally. So thank you all so much for joining us. Thanks to all the beings we're working together with, and we know that this is something that's been going on for a long time. If we go back 100 years, 500 years, 1,000 years, 5,000 years, we always find people who are teaching the teachings and living the life of inclusion, of kindness and compassion for other human beings and for animals. And we see this woven into the very foundation, not only of our sacred texts, but of our own minds and hearts as well. So this is a beautiful day and another opportunity for us to come together and deepen our understanding, perhaps in some ways, of the spiritual dimension of veganism. That's kind of one of the main focuses of the World Peace Diet. It's actually, sometimes I don't use the word spiritual, although I think it is actually a good word in the sense that we're talking about getting beyond materialism, or this idea that I'll be happy if I can just accumulate matter, including eating material beings, that we reduce animals to matter and then we reduce ourselves the same way. So the whole idea is to see that we have another way of living that's possible, and that this is now, it's a sense, it's not just an option for us to explore and talk about these ideas, but it's essential that we look more and more deeply into these ideas and that this is happening. So one of the issues that I noticed coming up lately, just in the last week or two, several times in my email correspondence, actually, with people that I've known for quite a while, is a sense, among a few people anyway, of wanting to give up, actually. I mean, one long-term vegan advocate friend of mine who lives in Oregon, you know, sent me, you know, I've been working my, you know, head off, basically, so, you know, to try to spread the vegan message for a long time and working, you know, with my friends, with my family, with my colleagues, and, you know, it just seems like nobody's gone vegan. They're all still eating meat. You know, some friends are eating a little less meat, but, you know, if I can't do better than this, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to go on anymore like this, you know, that kind of idea. And another friend of mine who's a woman who's an advocate in the Kansas City area also has been kind of expressing the sense that, you know, things have gotten harder lately, that there's more pushback from friends and family and from official, you know, like health food stores where she used to give lectures, and now it's harder to do that. There's more pushback. There's more people sort of like, well, you know, I have free range meat and dairy and it's okay. And so, some people I think are feeling that it's getting worse or getting more difficult for them in their vegan advocacy perhaps. So I think, you know, it's interesting to hear what you all are thinking, if you have any thoughts about that. For myself, you know, there's definitely a sense, especially in the traveling to new areas and seeing or returning to areas where I've been before, to see the wonderful increase in the sheer volume of people who are interested in vegan living. So I'd like to just say just briefly a little bit about my experience in Europe, because I think it was very very inspiring, creating a sense of optimism in the sense that there's a lot happening, and like, for example, okay, so I flew over from Orlando to London, and I arrived on a Friday for the Brighton Veg Fest, which is going to be Saturday and Sunday. And a friend of mine who I've never actually met physically before, named Richie Watson, who puts on events in England and lives in the south end of London, picked me up at the airport, and basically with his wife and little girl, brought me to Brighton. And Brighton is a beautiful English town, I think, and it's right on the ocean. And so there, the Brighton Veg Fest is one of, I think, basically four main veg fests that are started as a series a few years ago, and it's just been gradually growing. I mean, I think probably 5 or 6 years ago, a guy named Tim Barford had the idea to start a Veg Fest series, and I think the first one actually maybe was in Brighton, and then he subsequently started has one now also in Bristol, and now he has also one in London, and then finally a fourth one in Edinburgh in Scotland. And each one is at a different time. One's in like February, late February, early March. That was this one. And, one's in maybe May, one's in maybe October, and one's in maybe December, something like that. So he kind of spaces it out. And they're all vegan, and they're really getting big. So, like, for example, the one in Brighton, London's the biggest, but the one in Brighton was up to 12,000 people. Came, and 12,000 people is actually, it's a lot of people, and they're all inside in a building, and it's one of the largest veg fests I've ever seen in terms of just massive people and hundreds of booths, they call them stalls, with vegan food and vegan products of a bewildering variety. I couldn't even begin to go through all the aisles, given the fact that I was a judge on a couple of different panels, plus giving lectures, and was just sort of busy with also talking to people near where I was mainly stationed. So I didn't get to see the whole thing, but I did get to see quite a bit of it, and it was very, again, like I say, very inspiring just to see the sheer quantity of energy. And I think most of the people who were there were probably not vegans, but they were all talking vegan. They're all very interested in that, and that was the whole point. And so a couple of things were particularly inspiring, I think, to me. One was the fact that on Saturday there was a special competition called the Effective Factor, and there were a number, I think it was, let me see, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So basically 7 finalists who there were many that had been sort of winnowed out by that point. But there were 7 finalists who were vegan advocates promoting a certain way of promoting veganism. And so the idea is, like, what's the most effective way to spread the vegan message? And so I was one of 3 judges. It was me, Dr. Casey Kaft. Some of you may know him. He's actually a professor at Boston University and the founder of Vegan Publishers, which published the second book, the book I edited called Circles of Compassion, Connecting Issues of Justice. And then Tim Sheaf also, who is, I guess, world famous as a world champion free runner. What free running is? I mean, he won the 2000, in 2009, he was the world champion. And it's that running, you see young people run through the cities, and they run from across parking lots and then leap over all kinds of obstacles and do flips and come down and jump over car doors and then keep going and then leap into tops of higher buildings and whatever. I mean, it's just a totally really challenging and acrobatic kind of feat. So he's a vegan and world champion in that. So anyway, he was kind of a celebrity. It was interesting to meet him. But what was great was just to see how well everybody did, in the sense that there was a woman who has vegan T-shirts and was talking about the many benefits of creating varieties of vegan T-shirts, and this is a way you can spread the vegan message without having to say anything. You can just wear them wherever you go in the public, and people will see the message on the front, put a message on the back, they'll see it back when you walk by, and then somebody else creates vegan ceramics, and she thinks it's a powerful technique. She's creating this whole series of plates, kind of like Judy Chicago did, but this is going to be for animals. So it's like using art to help people see the violence towards animals and so forth. And then there was a guy named Dean Branker from the Vegan Society, and he has been going into public schools for about 8 years, I guess, and it's just full time. He started out as a complete volunteer, and now he's paid, and he speaks to, I think, basically 11 to 18 years old or something like that about the benefits of vegan living. And then there was another guy who's his name is Rob Masters, the head of the London Vegan Meetup, which is the largest vegan social group in the world, and has become a valuable community for vegans. And he argued that it's also a great way to bring vegan, spread the vegan message and to help bring about more vegan living. And then there was, so there was all these, and there were a few other ones, a woman named Ruth Ha, who was into creating Vegantopia, and she was a big fan of the World Peace Diet, so we had quite a talk a few times. And then, but what was really interesting, actually, was the one who went last, the fellow, he goes by Vegan Geezer, Vegan Geezer, G-E-E-Z-E-R, and he makes, and so his whole idea was that the most effective way to spread the vegan message in the world today is through YouTube. And he did put a lot of effort into memorizing a long, long poem. The whole thing was about 8 minutes. And along with creating a whole video and emphasizing how with YouTube, there's a place for everyone. Everyone, no matter who you are, if you have something to say about veganism, you can do it. Whether it's talking about your 5 tips for a great vegan day, or ways to veganize recipes, or to show some footage from underneath, undercover footage, just to be in front of the camera and share your feelings. He said that there's, and he showed, quick sort of little vignettes, clips of all these various different types of approaches, and it was really inspiring, I have to say. So he was the big winner. His presentation, really hands down, was the winner, and I have to say it was very inspiring. You think about it, I mean, with YouTube, before pre-YouTube, in a sense, and pre-internet, the media was pretty much one way. We used to, sit in front of the TV and have the corporations would decide what we're going to watch, and then we have to watch it, And with YouTube, it's exactly, in a sense, the opposite. We create the content we want to watch, and we can watch content that other people make that we like, and so it's utterly, democratized information sharing and film and documentaries and entertainment. I mean, so just watching that 8-minute video, I have a link to it in the April. I should have gotten this one, but I have a link to that video in the April. So it'll be in our next resources. But you can just go to Vegan Geezer too on YouTube, and if you kind of look around a little bit for his video, about the his video of, you know, for the Brighton Veg Fest. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And so that was one of the inspiring moments for me, was to see these, you know, the various ways that people are, of course, sharing the video message, and so many other ones too, but to really tune into how powerful video is. And it's great to see. I mean, you know, Madeline and I have a YouTube channel with a lot of my lectures, of course, are up there, and interviews are up there. Madeline has a whole series of cooking videos where she shares lots of different recipes and where she, you know, that she makes vegan food, and gets really a lot of comments and people. And we also have, you know, vegan gardening and all these kinds of things. So from our experience, I feel like we're, in many ways, we're just crashing the surface of what we could be doing. But it's something that's really available to anyone today. It's just democratized. If we have a cell phone or any kind of a camera, it's not difficult to take videos and put them up, and then people can watch them, and we can find ourselves really you know, making a positive difference in the world. I just spent, an hour actually talking to Erin Janis. I don't know if you know her, but she's got her own vegan channel, and one of her famous videos that has gotten almost a million hits is Dairy is Scary. Dairy is effing scary is actually what it says. And it's really well done, and that's just gone pretty much viral. But she's done quite a few other ones on lamb and wool and chicken and fish and lots of other things. And she's a big fan of the World Peace Diet, and so we're looking into possibly doing some work together to help spread the vegan message. And there's just lots of possible interconnections with people through video. And I can actually say a lot more, but I mean it's a huge subject. But if anyone does have any specific questions about these kinds of things, feel free to let me know. I know quite a few of you are using video, and it's a great way to bring the vegan message to the world through discussions you can have up on YouTube. There's all kinds of, we can archive and document and share, and then we can post through Facebook and Twitter and all these other ways, Instagram, I guess, too, and link things up for people, and they can share them. And so this kind of way of living, this way of using video, it's a way. This is, I guess, the idea is this is a whole new way of living now, where we are able, with our creativity, to spread the vegan message. So I gave a couple of lectures also on both on Saturday and Sunday. They were really well attended. I mean, they were totally packed. People were absolutely crammed in. We had probably over 200 people coming to the lectures that I gave there at the Brighton Veg Fest. And it was really good also to see that Tim Barford gave another lecture on Sunday morning, where he said there will be zero tolerance for behavior that is not in alignment with vegan values. In other words, there's certain, it's been one person who's been kind of well known in the vegan movement, but doesn't really, it's pretty well known, treat people very well. And so he really, I thought, did something that was quite noble and admirable by standing up and just saying, we'll never allow that kind of behavior here, or to have, have him speak here. Because I guess a lot of it happens later on Facebook and so forth. So just to the veganism, really the whole idea, and this is something that I emphasized quite a bit when I was there, is that it's essentially a movement based on loving kindness and compassion for animals and for each other, encouraging each other to work together to question the violence in our society. And there's really no place for harsh criticism and condemnation of other people's methods or ideas, and that we should be respectful of animals, of all animals, including human animals. That's the whole point, having respect for other beings, and it's not just animals, but human animals. So that was a really big breakthrough, actually, that happened, I think, in the whole movement with Tim and all of the Veg Fest in England. I think this will be happening more and more in this country as well. So that was very interesting. And then basically after that, just to kind of wrap up here, I did sort of this whirlwind lecture tour. So then I went Sunday night. As soon as that was over, after my final lecture there, I got a ride to Birmingham, and the next evening on Monday night, gave a lecture there to in a very nice theater, and it was well attended. It was really a beautiful, very nice event with food and just very beautifully organized by a fellow named Steve Palmer in the Birmingham Vegan Society, and he's a longtime student of Buddhism, and so there were lots of interesting conversations about spirituality and Buddhism and veganism and Christianity too. I mean, just the whole, the way that our society, and very often spiritual teachers don't want to talk about the connection between animals, abuse and spirituality. And then the next, and then I took a train to Bristol on Tuesday, and Tuesday night I spoke in Bristol at the complete opposite type of a thing. And this was, again, just, I don't know if I can possibly describe it well, but it was, it was freezing cold. I mean, it was below freezing, probably in the high 20s or so. And the event was held at a place called a Whole Foods co-op. And so don't let yourself think about like it's anything like a Whole Foods here in this country. This is like a little co-op with some bushel baskets of rutabagas and potatoes and broccoli and things around the sides. It was a gigantic garage door. It was the only door. It was wide open. And so everybody was inside, and it was 25 degrees in there. I mean, just like it was outside, it wasn't any warmer. And but the neat thing was, it was just filled up. When I first got there, there was pretty much nobody there. But within, say half an hour, everybody had come, and it was all these young people. I mean, they were young people, like in their 20s, and it was a potluck, and so everybody brought food and put it on a table, and everybody was eating and laughing, and just there was not one negative expression. I mean, it was just very just very happy people, and laughing and happy and all, eating all this vegan food, these young, lots of people with dreadlocks and piercings and all that. And it really went great. So, and then there was a space next door that also was a big garage door, although it was, that was able to be closed, and but although I can't say it was heated, it was still really cold. But anyway, I gave a lecture there, and the place was utterly packed. I mean, it was really a great turnout. We're talking probably a good 60 to 70 people, I guess, were there in that space. And it went very well. And then I went from there to the next event, which was in London, and that was held in London at a vegan restaurant. And again, was also well attended. And then the next day, I flew from London to Dublin. And I just want to say a couple words about Dublin, because in Dublin I was basically picked up in by a woman named Helen Higgins, and she brought me over to the farm sanctuary that is run by Sandra Higgins. They're not related, even though they have the last name, same last name. But Sandra Higgins is a World Peace Science facilitator. Some of you may know of her work. She's really committed and really serious and effective and highly capable person. I'm really impressed with Sandra. She has about 75 animals, a lot of sheep, goats, one pig, a lot of chickens, turkeys, and a few other, ducks and geese and other animals that she has rescued over the years on an Irish farm that's beautiful. Probably 50 acres maybe. I don't know how big it is, but that's owned by her partner, a beautiful guy named Ronnie. And they have a one-man helper, a man from Germany who's really good. And then they have some volunteers, too, I think, that help quite a bit, especially in the summer. There weren't any there when I was there. And she's also a psychologist, and so she does counseling for people who are vegan advocates who may be getting burned out and things. So she knows a lot about those subjects. She's also really well-known. I mean, Kim Barford, for example, the founder of the Veg Fest, was talking about her. She created the largest vegan billboard campaign ever, and it ran all over Ireland and Dublin on buses. Hundreds of billboards and posters, and in universities and the bathrooms and just everywhere. And she worked with local, actually I think somebody in Colorado who's a vegan designer and designed very impactful billboards and things that showing the connection between cruelty in dairy, especially in dairy products, and also in egg products, and that created a big backlash in the media, and she found herself on national radio debates with the representative from the local farmers unions and so forth, and she defended herself just fantastically well. She's the one who put together my lecture tour in Dublin. I stayed with her there. I mean, I stayed in a little outbuilding they have where guests can stay. It was very simple, I'm used to living in an RV, so I was fine. It was kind of like an RV, basically parked on the side. And the two events in Dublin went very well. They were, one was at the university and co-sponsored by students, and they helped promote it and get the hall. And then the other one was right in downtown Dublin, and it was absolutely packed. It was a smaller venue, but it was, maybe 75 or 80 people or maybe more, maybe 100 were crammed into this room. And so it was really great to see the interest. I guess that's the point. Everywhere I went, there was a lot of interest. And the events in Dublin, there was just, Sandra did a terrific job. And we have videos of these. You can see her introduction and the lectures I gave. And also Roger Yates, who's really kind of a famous animal rights activist. He was a contemporary of Ronnie Lee. He's one of the co-founders of the Animal Liberation Front way back in the 1970s, I guess. He was there and helping support the all the events that we were doing too. So it was just it was great to see these things happening, and there's definitely a strong grassroots vegan activist movement happening in England and in Ireland thanks to the efforts of so many people, and I was able to really see that very directly. And then finally, I flew from Dublin to Amsterdam, and then took the train to Utrecht and spoke for 2 days on Saturday and Sunday for, it's called Veggie World, which is a, it's kind of a similar thing. There's a German group, I think, that's based in, somewhere, I think in, Frankfurt area. And they have, figured out how to create very well attended and successful vegan events. And so they've been doing them all over Germany, similar like vegan festivals. They call it Veggie World. And now they're expanding. So they're having two, again, I think this year in Paris, one in Utrecht. They're going to do one in Zurich. And so this is really, I think, bodes very well. There's when these events happen, they draw thousands of people. I would say this was a good 3,000 or 4,000 people in Utrecht. It was a smaller venue, but it was so packed with people you could hardly move in the middle of the afternoon. And again, my events were my lectures were so full it was unfortunate. I mean, people, the first day they were just out the door everywhere. And so then the next day I gave two lectures. So and we kind of split it up so the people would come early. And then I gave my second lecture in this really large space, pretty much the entire conference center everyone could hear me. So I guess the bottom line was the message was very well received, and it looks to me like there are grassroots groups that are doing a great job to help bring the message and bring the opportunity for people to talk to each other and learn more in a variety of ways. And when I returned, Madeline had just gone over to Switzerland because her mother, who's, as you may be aware, 96-year-old, she's vegan, she was having some health challenges. And so it was really successful. I mean, it was one of those things where it seemed to us that she had been, had gone into a hospital for some tests and things, and the tests were doing more harm than good. And the chemical kind of drugs and things that they were giving her, they were sort of upping some other various things, and she started really looking like she, had one foot in the grave and one foot on the banana peel. I mean, it didn't look too good. And so the great thing actually was, Madeline had, in her younger days, studied anthroposophy and the Waldorf school movement, which is sort of an alternative. They have an alternative healthcare system also, and where they, instead of doing drugs and things, they do herbs and compresses and focus on music and art and focus more on the whole person. And her mother had never shown any interest in that, so we'd never. But they actually have a clinic, not too far away. And so, when she was really not doing well in the typical chemical drug type situation, she probably at this point would be dead if we had seen, had this idea to just check the Ida Wegman clinic, which is this anthroposophical clinic. And sure enough, she agreed to go there, and we sent her there, and they just treated her really well. She said it was just like a whole different thing. She had this very nice room with kind of a wooden bed and nice drapes on the window, and this woman with a violin would come around and play music to her. And it was, the food was a lot better, and herbs and compresses and things. So the upshot is she's home again. She's living by herself. She's goes into town and buys her own produce. And so she's back on the swing of things. So that went very well, all things considered. So that's our basic report from for the last few weeks of, you know, going to Europe and doing this this whirlwind, and now we're just beginning our to move in our RV. Be speaking in Jacksonville, and then we're just going to be, and then going to, I'll be flying to Seattle the next weekend, which is Easter weekend, to speak at the Intersectionality Conference. I'm not sure if people have heard about that, but I just want to let everybody know if you're interested. You can find out more if you go to our website and just click on tour schedule, and then just you can look at the various events. And we're going to be working our way up through South Carolina and Georgia and so forth. But before that, I'll be speaking at it's called Interspecies and Intersectional Justice, and it's put on by the Whidbey Institute, which is Whidbey Island, just north of Seattle. And they've got some really well-known speakers who will be speaking. Carol Adams will be speaking, Breeze Harper, Patrice Jones, Don Moncrief, Lauren Ornelas, and myself, Sarah Woodcock, also. So these, if you're kind of knowledgeable of some of the people who have been writing and have organizations, like the Food Empowerment Project, Lauren Ornelas, and Don Moncrief also has a great organization that gives a lot of money to groups who are helping to feed hungry people vegan food. And her organization is called the Well-Fed World. And Patrice Jones runs the Vine Sanctuary in Vermont, which is sanctuary, and she's also a pretty prolific writer. Of course, Carol Adams wrote The Sexual Politics of Meat. I think it's a good sign to see that these kinds of conferences are being held, and looks like it's going to be well attended. And Howard Lyman also is actually speaking right at the end of the conference. And so then we'll be traveling and up into Georgia, and we'll be with our friend Julie West, who's a World Peace Eye facilitator. She's working through the program just outside of Atlanta, and people at Loving Hut, and also in Athens, and we'll be in Charleston, South Carolina, also right before that, where we have Grace Lorraine, who's a World Peace Eye facilitator. I mean, there's a lot of people who are helping to set things up. And then as we go north up through Asheville and then up into Virginia and up into Baltimore area, which will be in June, May and June, and then up into Portland and in New England over the summer, and then heading across the Midwest in the early fall, and we'll be back in California. The plan is in October. So again, if anyone who happens to be on the call, if you're interested in having us do something in your area, if it's possible, we'll try to do so, of course. And otherwise, the movement seems to be just growing, from my point of view, by leaps and bounds. And so I'd like to thank the all the people who have been helping to set these various events up. It's a huge amount of efforts very often for people to do. We just did a lecture in Orlando just a couple of days ago. My brother, who came up from Ecuador, I haven't seen him for 8 years, was just visiting, and so my mother went to that lecture, and it was set up by Don Murphy, who's a World Peace Eye facilitator. So I want to just thank, you know, people for your efforts to help coordinate some things, and then also, just encourage everyone to realize, all of us to realize that we have great resources together. You know, we can We can work together on projects in a variety of ways. We have, still have our friend, for example, Irina Mukke from Atlanta. She's now, I think she's up to about 20 or maybe more, 25, maybe even up to as many as 30 people are now going into schools as teachers. I mean, her program is exploding really positively, very well. I just met a few more people who are World Peace Diet folks who are now being paid as part of her program to go into local schools. They're being trained usually in Atlanta, and then they're learning how to set things up. And in fact, I think Lorena's program is even setting things up, so they don't even have to set it up. They just go in and give the lectures. And the presentations for the young people. So there's lots of ways we can work together to help bring the message. And some of the ways, of course, we can start out as volunteers, and it's wonderful. Pretty soon we're getting paid, which I know a lot of people who are living in our society and not able to make a living doing something they love to do, like spreading the vegan message, that it's a great way to as a volunteer, and then perhaps you'll find a niche opening where you'll be able to find yourself being financially supported for helping to spread the vegan message as well. So I'd like to stop here, and I've been talking now for kind of a long time, it seems like, and open it up for questions or concerns or comments that anyone may have. And so, as you all know, you can press *6 if you have a question, or if you want to say something that everyone can hear. And when I see that you've done that, I can unmute you. So we have one person so far who has pressed *6, and that is Julie. So Julie, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you. And so you can go ahead and speak. Can you see, did that just work? Are you
yep.
there?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Great. Yes, I hear you.
Uh-huh. Terrific. Boy, you hit the nail on the head about all the work it is to promote something, because, as you know, I've been trying to promote you come into the Heron House, but it's worth it. And I had an opportunity. I just celebrated a birthday, and I can't tell you how many people wanted me to celebrate my birthday and what they could do for me. And I was like, oh, I should have told them all what they could do is come to your talk on the 6th.
Right.
Uh-huh. And right. The same for my family, you know, to encourage them to watch Cowspiracy or something with me, because it's a little bit more
Minute
for them. But anyway, I had sent you various questions, and you had encouraged that call in with them. And one of them, which I have yet to hear you address, so I'd really like to talk about it. Some of them have been answered since then. One is, you know, that I've been a vegetarian, you know, for most of my life, and a vegan for a year. And I shouldn't say vegan. Actually, I eat a plant-based diet. I've still got a ways to go. And that was one of my questions, because I have things like hand drums, and I still have leather shoes, and my car seats are leather. And my question to you was, it doesn't feel very reverent to own them, but at the same time, it feels irreverent to discard them after something has already died. And so I'm sort of at that crossroads of, what do people do at this point?
Well, good. That's a great question, you know, and I think the usual pattern, more or less, is when people move toward a vegan way of living, it's always done in stages, you know, and I think it's healthy to do it in stages. Quite a bit of research does indicate that if people jump too fast from, you know, total meat eater to vegan, very often it doesn't stick and they end up going back. But to kind of move, you know, move so you can kind of embrace and consolidate your position and so forth, and get and be well grounded in the plant-based eating, you know, is really, I think, the most important thing, because the plant-based eating is the key in the sense that probably 98% of animals that are abused and killed, it's in the food system. You know, it's probably at the most, maybe 2% are for entertainment and leather and other things. It's still, you know, millions of animals that are horribly abused for these other things. So we don't want to certainly in any way neglect them. But anyway, focus on the food is the key. And so you get, you get your, a sense of really understanding vegan nutrition, really understanding the issues with the environment and with animals and with dairy especially and eggs and all that, and there's, you know, a lot to talk about there. And then it's good also to, you know, to just so you can really feel like you're congruent with what you're saying, especially when you're going to be an either an activist or an advocate for others, that you're not being obviously incongruent. In other words, if you are talking to your friends and your friends, you're telling them that you're a vegan, or you're just saying how great it is that you're eating less, you know, not eating meat and dairy anymore, and they say, but you're wearing, look at your leather, look at your boots or your shoes or your whatever, your handbag. So, so it's definitely a good idea, I think, to find replacements for things that are very obvious, that you're like walking around in or carrying around with you, and when you go to, you know, meet people or talk to them, you got your belt or your handbag or your shoes or whatever it is, a coat, you know, that you're not wearing like a leather coat or a fur trim thing or whatever, you know, all those things. So wool and fur and leather and silk, the idea with those is to phase them out as best you can, and it's really an individual kind of journey. You know, some people will do sort of a ceremony where they either give away or take it to the Goodwill, or some people don't want to give it to anybody. They'll maybe bury it or something like that. But there's various ways people go about doing that. Giving it to certain, you know, to friends who maybe will use them, so that's something I think that, you know, like if you have something like, you know, your car has other seats, then, you know, I wouldn't worry that much about it, really. I mean, it's just what it is. And, you know, maybe if you buy another car at some point, then you won't. But don't buy a new car just because of that. You know, so I think it's, you know, you want to try to minimize the amount of environmental pollution, you know, so we want to minimize. So we don't, want to necessarily buy new things if because we're getting rid of what we already have, unless we really feel like that's something I just don't want to have now anymore in public. So it's kind of drawing a line in those ways.
I am having a little bit of that experience, and I'm lucky because from my earliest memory, I've never liked the thought of eating meat, you know, very sensitive.
Right.
And the same I will say, except for shoes, probably, you know, I've never wanted a leather coat. I do own a great grandmother's leather coat, but I've never, you know, so that's really natural for me not to want to ever buy anything again, sitting on furniture, things like that. But, I just wasn't sure, like, gosh, once you have something, I knew I wasn't going to change my car seat.
And I think you don't need to really say, you know, well, I'm not really a vegan because I still have a leather car seat. I mean, you know, I would say if you're really living your life, you're not buying anything as much as possible. You're not buying anything that causes suffering to animals. You're not, you know, also try not to buy products that are tested on animals if it's at all possible. And then try not to obviously support SeaWorld and other and zoos circuses, and you know, so basically that, and then eating. But the main thing is the food. And then, of course, the other, as much as possible, the other things too. Sometimes it's sometimes you just have to draw a line. It's virtually mm-hmm. impossible to, as people, you know, point out that there are some, maybe a little bit of animal fat, even in car tires and in certain things you need to buy. But as we move, as our whole society moves towards veganism, those side products, those other animal products will obviously be replaced too. So, that's the main thing. So that's my response to that.
Just that none of that ever resonated, just sort of makes it feel true because, you know, when you're innocent children, you know, you've got that purity in your heart.
Right.
And it's just, and I've never, I never could go to the zoo either.
right.
I felt bad. So, the only other question, which I think most of my questions have been answered just from listening to your different talks and over time, except for that one I hadn't heard anybody say, but I just wanted to put this out there for anybody that, may not have, figured out an answer is, I had written you about what to do about pests in your house, and I'm in a very wooded area, and I had mentioned to you that there's no getting away from critters, which, of course, is why we're here. I've had
possums
living under my house for I don't know how long. They don't bother me at all. But and my house is just down the street from the Heron House. But at the Heron House, you know, I can't just let bugs and ants roam around if people are having an event with food, and then rats. And I had mentioned that that I actually put diatomaceous earth around the house. Well, PETA has some really good resources for that. That's what I wanted to mention.
Oh, good.
So I have tried the Have a Hearts with rats, and they're too smart for them. But this, they have one there that I'm going to try, and it looks really like it's got way more potential. And then somebody mentioned putting like a construction bucket down and putting something in that, and then some way for them to get to it, and then you just take them wherever.
And then take them away far enough away and let them go. Yes.
So that was a real question, but they actually addressed everything from ants to roaches and rats, and they did have some resources there. So that's the only reason that I wanted to bring that one up. And other than that, I think all my questions have been answered between my emails and now.
Great.
We're really looking forward to having you come out. So
great. Well, thanks. Thank you.
Terrific.
Yeah.
And
once again,
thank you for all you do.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Julie. And
sure.
If you have any other questions come up,
that's
let
it.
Us know. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Later, thanks. Yeah, bye. All right. So let's see. And then trying to see if Marlene, are you there? Marlene, can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you, Will. I have one comment and one question. And my comment is, tomorrow I feature the Intersectional Justice Conference on Vegan Nation on the radio show.
You mean the one in Whidbey Island?
Yes, that you're speaking at.
That is great. So how are you going to be doing that exactly?
I interviewed Monty Jackson-Jones and Christopher Sebastian, the organizers. So that's what the show is tomorrow, their interview, which, of course, we talk about you in your speech at the Whidbey Institute Intersectional Justice Conference. So that's going
to
tomorrow at 12:30 to 1 p.m. on WCUW.org.
I'm going to write that down. Okay, so tomorrow at WCUW.org, WCUW.org at noon Eastern time, right, or 12:30?
12:30 to 1.
12:30 to 1. Awesome. That's great. Boy, you're really on top of things. That's great. And, Martin is the one who's organizing, and Christopher Sebastian McJetters, his name is. And, in fact, I just met him. He was at the Brighton Veg Fest speaking. He's just moved, actually, to Europe from the United States. So he's over there now. and I guess won't be joining us at the actual conference, but he's one of the authors in the Circles of Compassion book that is about intersectionality too. So I'm sure it must be a great interview, highly recommended, and thanks so much for doing that. That sounds like it'll be a great show.
Thank you. And my question is about your comment earlier about the individual or individuals of not, and I understand not to name any names, and I would just like more clarification on that, because I have to say I've been a little confused, and this has happened on Facebook, that I have shared some posts from actually two different individuals. And I have people say, oh, I'm defending you because you shared these posts of these people, and I'm confused by it. I don't even know. I read the comment, and it sounds like a really great vegan comment. It sounds like love. So could you give more clarity on that? And those are my last question. Thank you.
So your question was what now exactly? I mean, when I spoke earlier about what Tim Barford said about just having loving, positive exchanges. Is that what you want more clarity about that or something?
Yes, because when I read quotes, it seems loving to me, but then I'm hearing from people that these aren't loving, so I really don't know what's going on with it, so I just like more clarity.
Right. Well, I didn't really want to get into naming any names. It's sort of an ongoing. Well, I guess I can name the name. Because it became really a big issue. It was Gary Francione. You know, he spoke at the Veg Fest in London. I think it was in October, and apparently as a result of that, he and some of his people on his Facebook page were quite vicious in their attacks on people within the movement in England, and I guess some in the United States too. And so Tim Barford was just saying that, you know, he really likes many of the ideas of Gary Francione, but the actual way of treating people was causing people in his movement to be suicidal. You know, they were so viciously attacked and relentlessly attacked on Facebook, and these are vegans attacking other vegans, you know, and saying that they're not real, that they're not doing advocacy correctly, and I've actually seen some of that kind of stuff happening. So he just said that he had invited actually Gary Francione to speak at the Veg Fest in Brighton where I just spoke, and he uninvited him because of all this criticism and misrepresentation, and so then Gary wrote a big condemnation of him, and so it's all splashed everywhere. It was all very public, so it's not like I'm talking about anything that's not well known. If anyone's interested in finding out more, I'm sure you could find out more. He wrote a multi-page document, apparently, Gary Francione did, although I actually haven't read it. But I've seen the pretty devastating effects that treating people disrespectfully can have. You know, I mean, I don't have any real reason for it. It goes contrary to the spirit of veganism, and it's not only that, it's counterproductive. It's bad for the movement, and it's unethical to boot. So, fortunately, I think, Tim stood up to him, and I think more and more people are going to be standing up against that kind of sort of this petty fiefdom mentality that, you know, it's either my way or the highway, and, you know, that kind of idea. So I think things have been getting healthier. I mean, I think it's a good sign of people just not tolerating abuse, you know, within the movement, and it shouldn't be happening. So that hopefully that'll make it a little clearer. Thanks, Marlene. Okay, so there's a wireless caller with area code 402 and 812. Are you still there? Would you like
yeah.
to say something? Hi.
Okay, thank you. I'm so excited to be joining you tonight. I have a family. I'm in Omaha, Nebraska, and
great. You want to just say your name or your first name?
My name is Durga. Thank you.
Gerda?
Durga. D-U-R-G-A, like the goddess Durga.
D-U-R-G-A. Wow, Durga. Okay, great. So what's on your heart or mind or what would you like to talk about?
Yeah, so thank you. All right, so I have three beautiful children, and they've been vegetarian all of their lives. I have a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 10-year-old. And I've been a vegetarian for a super long time, and then I went vegan in December and brought everyone on the bandwagon with me, and after I watched the movie Cowspiracy, I was YouTubing and found your video and fell in love with, you know, everything that your message brings to the world.
Great.
And so the thing that I am feeling a little bit, my heart is, the heartstrings are getting tugged a little bit, is that, you know, my 10-year-old, I homeschool my kids, and so my 10-year-old, really, she feels very passionate about it. She reflects my passion about veganism and helping animals, and she's always been very, you know, drawn toward that, as children are, and so this seems just so right and beautiful for our family, and so it's hard. In some respects, because, as an adult, it's fine for me to go without making contact with, people that don't, aren't open to the vegan message. But for her, you know, we have classes that she goes to, and so she's doing these amazing projects and, you know, doing presentations on veganism and bringing these ideas into classes. And she, you know, did the vegan food pyramid and did a talk on veganism. And so, but it's difficult because I don't know how or if I can help her to feel more confident about it, because people, and it's generally adults who kind of disregard the message, you know, especially coming from a child, because there's that, you know, that hierarchy that people believe that children don't have a voice or opinion about things. And so it happens that, oh, well, where do you get your protein? And, you know, these kinds of questions that are a little bit degrading, like as if, you know, she's lacking in her life, and she's like this amazing, beautiful, vibrant little child who's like, you know, got so much amazing spiritual energy. And then along with that, you know, just kind of in the school environment, well, you know, I just don't, you know, people just don't get it. And so I want to help her to be able to feel good and confident about it, because she'll come home from, you know, a class that she has once a week, and she's like, oh, yeah, well, the teacher asked me, well, where do you get your protein? You know, and then these kinds of questions come up, and I'm like, well, plants have protein, too, and I don't understand why she's kind of challenging these ideas, like, as if, I don't know. Getting across the idea?
Yeah, so, all right. So I would say, you know, the thing to understand, I guess, a couple things. One, of course, is the fact that, you know, as I've often said, veganism itself is not hard. What's hard is other people, you know. And so When I was at the farm in Tennessee, there was basically 1,000 people, 200 kids. They all went to the same school. They were all vegan. There was never any issue. There was never any teacher saying, where do you get your protein? Everybody was eating the same. It was a big community, and it was no problem because people were on the same page. When you're homeschooling a child and then she's going out and she's in some classes or whatever, then there's going to be people who are part of the, they know any better. You know, they don't know where protein comes from, and they don't understand. So your daughter is on much firmer ground. So I would say, you know, the best thing is for you to really work with her and educate her and give her the answers and the solid foundation, you know. I mean, really educate her, really help educate her. She's probably interested. I mean, you know, where do you get your fiber? You know, where do you get your folate? Where do you get your vitamin C, E, and so forth? You know, those are primarily plant-based nutrients. Where do you get those? You know, she can always ask them those kinds of things. If they ask where she gets her protein, or she can talk about how plant. She's so happy. You know, I think the thing to emphasize is you know, that she can respond in ways where she can just say she's just delighted to be eating a plant-based diet, because there's, you know, all the research has shown, including the American Dietetic Association, that there is plenty of protein, higher quality protein, in plant-based meals that are well planned, and she loves, you know, eating this way. And, you know, having her be really, I think, proactive, the more proactive she is and can really articulate things, if that's possible, that's really, I think, where she'll feel the most confident. There's always, 10,000, situations that will be coming up. And, even when we're getting older, the same thing happens. So the more support you can provide, the more emotional encouragement, the more information, you know, maybe she can help educate some of these people so that, or you can also talk to them yourself and say, you know, if you want to find out more, you know, you don't need to ask her, ask me, whatever you think. But I think.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Yeah. You have to see where she's at, what she wants, but you can, take control of, as the parent, you have, as a vegan parent, you're in a situation where, it's just really helpful to be as knowledgeable as you can be and confident in what you're saying. And so you can talk about, not only the nutritional aspects, but anything else that they may be wondering about. And, you know, you're on totally solid ground. That's the good news. I mean, you know, just look at the largest health maintenance organization in the whole United States, which is Kaiser Permanente, and how all the doctors, nurses, we're talking about 30,000 health professionals have all been given instructions that for every patient who comes in who has any kind of a problem at all, that they're all required to recommend a plant-based diet for everybody, because it is the best, it is the healthiest way to live.
Wow.
And so, you're just on total solid footing, and people are, it's like they're from another century. You know, they don't know, they're just backward. And so the idea is to just, carry that kind of confidence in the way you walk and talk and the way, and your daughter will, and your kids will pick that up from you. I mean, they'll, when they see your confidence and you help them to understand, the foundational, that all the nutrients come from plants. There's zero nutrients that are created by animals. Plants create all the amino acids, create all the proteins. Animals don't create any. you know, basic understanding, you know, there's 40 million proteins that our bodies make, and it's much easier for our bodies to make them from plants than from animals, because the plants create the amino acids we can use directly rather than having to break them all down. If they're animal-based, and how that causes acidification of tissues and inflammation and so forth. So anything, you know, you can do to help your daughter understand these things. The information's available. I mean, the World Peace Diet is, of course, a lot of information and the trainings. And that kind of confidence is really golden, right? Just a beautiful thing you can have, where you'll know more than any doctor or anybody else, you know, and that'll be your protection, really, I think, and hers.
Wonderful.
So that's what I would recommend. Yeah.
Thank you. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I thought maybe we would just have to move someplace where everyone is vegan, which would be okay, too.
Right.
So, okay,
well,
yeah.
You know, some people try doing that, too. There's Russia is the place where these vegan communities are just booming over there. It's the emerging vegan capital, and also Taiwan, and then Germany, and also Israel. I mean, there's actually quite a few places where vegan communities are growing more and more. Hawaii is actually, too, the big island. We're going to be going back there again in November, probably. There's quite a bit happening. And Costa Rica, Ecuador, there's places there, too. But I think, you know, if you can do it in Omaha, then that's wonderful, because you'll be creating a liberated space for some other people, actually, that may, you know, help everyone more.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Talk to you later. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Looks like we've got another wireless caller from area code 602. Hello. You still there? Hello. Let's see. Okay. And then we also have Judy Carmen. My little thing doesn't work. Doesn't seem to be working on it. Oh, wow. So, let's see. Judy, are you there? Or I seem to be having some trouble again with my.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Who's this?
This is Judy Carmen.
Hey, Judy. All right. Hi. Good.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to say something to Julie, if she's still there. She was asking about what to do with her stuff that still has animal stuff
right.
in it. There are animal rehabilitation, like especially wildlife rehabilitation places, that would love to have furs, if she has any furs, if she knows anybody with furs, because they can give them to the little critters, you know, baby bears and little babies like that who've lost their moms. So that's
right.
And then,
so any wildlife rehabilitation centers of any kind would, I can see what you're saying, would love
right.
furs.
And,
yeah.
And maybe some shelters for dogs and cats. I'm not sure about that. But
right.
Also with the mice and maybe the rats, we live in the country too, as Will knows, and we've discovered a product called Fresh Cab, and it was invented by a woman to put in the cab of your tractor to keep mice out during the winter. Well, it works really well. We have
wow.
had really good luck with it. You can get it at tractor supply places and stuff. And we also are pouring ammonia around the perimeter of the house because we've read that that kills their little pheromone trails. Because
ammonia.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they lay those pheromone trails down so their friends can
follow
them.
Right.
And so if you can erase the pheromone trails, that helps. And ammonia supposedly does that. So we're trying all kinds of things. But those are working pretty well. And then
great.
On Durga, if she's still there, I wanted to suggest that she go to Joanne Farb's website because Joanne raised her two girls vegan. And one of them is in college now and one is in high school, and neither the high school or the college are vegan, of course. And so she could really, I talked to Durga, I think, and give her some tips because they've been through it. She homeschooled, but then when the girls got to be high school age, they wanted to take classes at the high school, not enroll in it, but they've taken debate and all sorts of different classes and been in the band and all that because they wanted that social contact. And of course, they were kind of shocked that there were so few people that would accept their vegan. And so they've learned a lot of different ways to deal with
that. Yes. Wow.
And so it's joannfarb.com, which is J-O-A-N-N. F as in Frank, A-R-B as in boy, .com.
Right.
And he could contact her through that. And I wanted to ask you, the billboard lady you were talking about.
Sandra Higgins,
in Germany? Where is she?
No, that's in Ireland.
Ireland. And what's her name?
Her name is Sandra Higgins. H-I-G-G-I-N-S, Sandra Higgins. And
does she have a website about billboards?
Yes. What I'll do is I'll have to put it up, and I'm not quite sure I can find. But she's become an inspiration for a lot of people because she was so effective. And she's working with a woman who's a graphic designer with Peaceful Prairie Sanctuary in Colorado.
Oh.
And a woman named Joanne something.
Yes, I heard we're doing something along that line.
Yeah, so she's really good, this graphic designer, and the billboards are very hard-hitting and really good.
Well, they are, and I love the idea because it plants a seed, but there's nobody to fight back at, you know, like a person telling you that.
Right.
Kind of gives you time to think about it. And
right.
So I really love the idea of billboards, but I can Google it. I'm sure we can find it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll send out an email follow up probably not till tomorrow morning with the recording link to this, and I'll put Sandra Higgins' website and Joanne Farb's website too.
Okay.
And send me an email, maybe Judy, if you have any links at all to those pheromone, anything that that was kind of interesting to help.
Okay.
Help with the rats or whatever.
Yeah.
That was helpful. That's always good to share too. All right.
Yeah, that's a challenge.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for this wonderful, wonderful call, as always, Will.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Judy. Thank you. All right. Good to hear your voice. Thanks. Yeah, bye-bye. All right, so it's now 10:30. It's basically an hour and a half, and this is it. This is the end for this particular call. I want to thank everyone who had questions, comments, and ideas to share. And our next call will be on April 21st, which is kind of an interesting, we'll be Asheville, North Carolina. So please stay in touch. I wish you, Mel and I just joined together with Tara and everyone, and just wishing you a wonderful month between now and then. Continuing the work that we're doing together to spread the vegan message. And there are just more and more contexts, it seems to me, that are opening up If you have any particular issues or questions that you would like to have addressed, and you want to let me know ahead of time, that's always a good idea. You can always send an email, and I will make sure that I write that down ahead of time so that I can cover that. I want to focus mainly on what we discovered in the most recent trip over to Europe. And so, all right, well, thanks to everyone, and all the best to you all. Much love. Never doubt that any effort that you ever make is ever lost. I think all the efforts that we make do help others. They do help contribute to the field of healing. And remember the Prayer Circle for Animals, the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals. We say today every day, actually, at noon, the prayer, which is compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Again, that's compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And the idea is that we can build a field of human consciousness that is dedicated to embracing and holding animals in our hearts with compassion, and that this will also support the outer work we're doing in the world to help educate and create protection and liberation for animals as well. As we liberate animals, we liberate ourselves. Thanks for making the efforts. It would have been great if we could have even talked to more of you, I know. But next time we'll start and hopefully get into the Q&A time a little earlier. All right, thanks again, and much love to you all. And I'll close now with, if we can, with a little bit of music. Thanks again for joining us.